How do you protect yourself from disinformation? In a culture where the communications guardrails seem to have disappeared, separating facts from falsehoods is increasingly difficult. But Sander van der Linden has a solution in his new book, Foolproof: Why Misinformation Infects Our Minds and How to Build Immunity. Sander is a professor of social psychology at the University of Cambridge, and he joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
I am Sander van der Linden. I'm a professor of social psychology at the University of Cambridge, and sometimes also jokingly referred to as Cambridge's defense against the dark arts teacher. I study the psychology of misinformation, why people believe it, how it spreads, and what we can do about it. I work with social media companies, governments, public health authorities to try to find solutions, some of which I present in my new book, Foolproof: Why Misinformation Infects Our Minds and How to Build Immunity. I'll talk about five big ideas from the book today. Here's the first one. Misinformation spreads like a virus. When researching the book, I came across a story about Anthony. Anthony is a young guy who had never really shown any interest in politics. He lives in the suburbs of Chicago and used to sell solar panels. But at some point during the pandemic, he became consumed with conspiracy theories about the election. So much so that on January 6, 2022, he decided to storm the Capitol wearing a bulletproof vest. After his arrest, Anthony apologized and said he had fallen victim to a contagious conspiracy theory. Referring to the torrent of misinformation that had temporarily engulfed his client, Anthony's lawyer stated, "You can catch this disease." The thesis that runs throughout the book is that this isn't just a loose analogy. Just like viruses take over their host cell in order to spread and replicate, a process called molecular hijacking, research shows that misinformation can deeply infiltrate our consciousness. But it's not always immediate. Just as the incubation period of viruses can range from a few days to years before people start showing symptoms, bad information can fester in our minds for years. I go through many empirical examples which show how misinformation can exploit cognitive biases in our brains, influence our beliefs and behavior, and even alter our memories of events that never really happened. Of course, the ultimate goal of the misinformation virus is to replicate itself, to have people spread false information onto others. Now here's where things get really interesting. We can actually use models from epidemiology that are normally used to study the spread of biological viruses to study how information pathogens spread in social networks. In this kind of network, people are the nodes with links to other people we are connected to in some way. Exposure to a misinformation pathogen can activate and infect an individual who can then readily spread it to others. We can even calculate the basic reproduction number, or the R0 value. That is, the average number of people who will start posting fake news following contact with an infectious individual. In 2021, the World Health Organization declared a worldwide infodemic to emphasize the striking parallels between how viruses and misinformation spread. Take, for example, the fact that people might not be intentionally spreading false information. A lot of us are asymptomatic. That is, we might be forwarding misinformation without even realizing it. The second big idea is that misinformation can kill people and democracy. Just as some viruses can ultimately kill people, misinformation has had deadly consequences too. In India, the spread of false rumors on WhatsApp has led to hundreds of violent mob lynchings. In Iraq, people, including children, have been hospitalized because they ingested toxic products that were falsely advertised on social media as a cure for the coronavirus. A recent report calculated that misinformation cost the Canadian healthcare system at least $300 million, with thousands of preventable deaths. People have died from COVID-19 because they refused treatment based on conspiracy theories. A man in Seattle shoved a sword through his own brother's head because he thought he was a shape-shifting lizard. Over 50 phone masts have been set ablaze in the UK alone because of false conspiracy theories linking 5G towers to coronavirus hotspots. Moreover, the consequences of misinformation can be long-term. In the early 2000s, vaccination coverage in both the UK and later the US plummeted following false claims that the MMR vaccine can somehow cause autism. It took many years for vaccine uptake to recover. But misinformation isn't just a direct threat to people's health or well-being. Some of its consequences are more pernicious and indirect. Ultimately, in order for misinformation to spread, it requires a susceptible host. As such, misinformation can do most damage when it taps into existing prejudices, conflict, and growing societal tensions and political polarization. Research shows that exposure to misinformation can lead people to lose trust in each other, our institutions, the mainstream media, and the electoral process itself. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that in order for misinformation to be influential, it needs to impact large groups of people. That's not true. With the assistance of dark posts, micro-targeting, and other manipulation techniques, actors can synthesize and tailor misinformation to just those people who are deemed most susceptible to persuasion. Many elections are decided on increasingly narrow margins. In short, you only need to dupe a minority of people in order to potentially undermine democracy. The third big idea is that we need to pre-bunk or inoculate against misinformation. So while this all sounds rather depressing, one thing my students tend to say about me is that I'm an eternal optimist. If we continue to follow the viral analogy, we inevitably arrive at a solution, the potential for a vaccine against misinformation. This idea of a psychological vaccine against fake news is something my lab has been working on for many years now. But before we get to the power of pre-bunking, it's probably useful to understand some of the limitations of traditional approaches like debunking and fact-checking. Although fact-checking is important, you can float misinformation within the split of a second, but it takes days, if not weeks, to craft a good fact-check. It's almost like a game of whack-a-mole. When you debunk one falsehood, another one pops up in its place. Moreover, even if you are successful in your debunking efforts, misinformation often lingers in the brain. What if I told you that earlier this week, I got terrible food poisoning from a place down your street, so that you should probably avoid it? Then, a week later, I tell you that I was mistaken. It was actually some other place. Regardless of this correction, every time you now pass that restaurant, you're going to think food poisoning. That's what we call the continued influence of misinformation. Jonathan Swift captured it well when he said, "Falsehood flies, and the truth comes limping after it, so that when men come to be undeceived, it is too late, the jest is over, and the tale hath had its effect." In other words, you can't unring a bell. For all of these reasons, it is easier to pre-bunk misinformation. This approach is all about building resilience to falsehoods in advance and follows the vaccination analogy exactly. Just as introducing a weakened or inactivated strain of a virus into the body triggers the production of antibodies to help fight off future infection, it turns out you can do the same with misinformation. By preemptively refuting and exposing people to a weakened dose of misinformation or the techniques used to spread misinformation, people can build up cognitive or mental immunity. Just as with regular vaccines, the more examples your body has of a potential invader, the better it can mount an immune response. Our research shows that it works the same way with the human mind. The more we can prepare people with weakened doses of the tactics used to mislead people, the better people become at identifying and neutralizing manipulation. So how do you achieve this practically? Well, you can leverage Star Wars. In one of our pre-bunking videos, we forewarned people that manipulators use predictable techniques to dupe people. One such technique is called a false dilemma. A technique which leads people to think there's only two options, while in fact, there are more. It's heavily deployed in politicized debates, by so-called YouTube gurus, and in misleading news headlines. For example, consider the claims, "Either you join ISIS, or you're not a good Muslim." Or, "We either need to improve our education system, or deal with crime on the streets." Back to Star Wars. In the experiment, we expose people to an inactivated strain of the virus. An episode from Revenge of the Sith, where Obi-Wan confronts Anakin Skywalker, who says, "Either you are with me, or you are my enemy." Obi-Wan replies, "Only a Sith deals in absolutes." We then tested people with a whole range of misleading headlines that make use of this tactic, and found that people could better identify and neutralize attempts to mislead them. The pre-bunk essentially acts like a broad-spectrum vaccine. In short, prevention is better than cure. The fourth big idea is about achieving psychological herd immunity. Although the idea behind a cognitive vaccine is powerful insofar as we can prepare people individually against impending misinformation, when you follow the viral analogy to its logical conclusion, you realize that the job is not yet done. Only when enough people in the population have attained a sufficient level of immunity will misinformation no longer have a chance to spread. Based on data from our experiments, computer simulations showed that in theory, herd immunity is not out of the question. But in order to scale the vaccine, we needed two innovations. The first is that you can't be pre-bunking every single falsehood. Instead, it's much more efficient to focus on the underlying techniques that are used to spread misinformation. Luckily, these are predictable. Consider that in the 1800s, people were fear-mongering that the cowpox vaccine, which was used against smallpox, would somehow turn you into a human-cow hybrid. Now, we hear that the COVID-19 vaccines are supposedly changing your DNA. It's the same trope, just 200 years apart. The advantage here is that you don't have to pre-bunk every conspiracy theory anew. Once people know the underlying trick, they're less likely to be fooled. The second innovation is that we needed a virtual needle to scale the approach. In one massive field experiment during the pandemic, we teamed up with the UK government, the WHO, and the United Nations to pre-bunk harmful misinformation about COVID-19. Across all social media channels, the campaign was able to reach over 200 million views. In another experiment we conducted together with Google, the first of its kind, we were able to run pre-bunking videos live on YouTube in the ad space, reaching millions of users. In theory, YouTube could use the ad space, not for profit, but to help pre-bunk potentially harmful misinformation by inserting and scaling our videos worldwide. Twitter conducted a massive pre-bunking campaign during the recent US presidential election, where they warned millions of users in advance that they might come across misinformation about voting by mail on the platform, but that they should rest assured that election experts agree that voting by mail is safe. Results indicated that the pre-bunking messages reinforced trust in the election process and led people to seek out more reliable information. Yet, although these experiments show the approach is scalable on social media, the key thing for me is not that inoculation should come from the top down. The approach is meant to empower anyone to pre-bunk falsehoods. The greatest potential for inoculation to spread is from person to person, speaking to our own family, friends, or neighbors. We all have the power to pre-bunk conspiracy theories and misinformation with a simple conversation. And that's how we'll build true herd immunity against misinformation. We can all pre-bunk conspiracy theories and misinformation with the power of a simple conversation. And that's how we'll build true herd immunity against misinformation. The last big idea is to gamify and don't tell people what to believe. One of the things our lab is known for, if nothing else, is our sense of humor. One of the first interventions we created was Bad News, a completely over-the-top social media simulation we designed with a gaming company that makes the idea behind pre-bunking fun and entertaining. It's not a boring media literacy lecture. It's kind of radical and meant to stimulate people's defenses. Bad News simulates Twitter and allows people to temporarily step into the shoes of an online manipulator. In the game, players are forewarned about the dangers of misinformation, but also actively encouraged to make use of weakened doses of common misinformation techniques as part of their journey to becoming a fake news tycoon. We call this active inoculation. Players are invited to generate their own antibodies. We spent years studying how professionals dupe people. From impersonating experts and concocting conspiracy theories to creating polarizing headlines and trolling people with a bot army. The idea is to build psychological immunity by actively helping players identify how they might be attacked with misinformation in the future. I like to compare it to the first time you see a new magic trick. You're duped and want to know how it works, right? I could either give you a complicated blueprint and engage you analytically, akin to a fact check, or let you step into the shoes of a magician for a while to figure out how the trick works on your own. I believe that the latter approach helps ensure that people are not fooled by the same trick twice. Importantly, from the very beginning, our approach was never about what's true or false. The amount of ridiculous fake news out there pales in comparison to the amount of misleading or biased news. I don't believe the problem we're facing is going to be solved by telling people what's fact or fiction. What we do in our games is ask people to judge the credibility of headlines based on the presence or absence of common manipulation techniques. We don't tell people what to believe in our interventions. The games are non-political insofar as people can make fun of the government or big corporations that control people on the right or left. In fact, the narrator tells players that it doesn't matter. The goal of misinformation is often just to divide people. Since Aristotle's time, techniques have repeatedly been used to mislead people, whether it's scapegoating, false dilemmas, conspiracy theories, or fake experts. I think we can all agree, left and right, that helping people discern these tactics is a good thing insofar as it empowers us to make up our own minds about what's reliable and what's not.
Thank you, Sander. That was Sander van der Linden with 5 big ideas from Foolproof: Why Misinformation Infects Our Minds and How to Build Immunity. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.